Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
The only way to score is, of course, to play with a hand break off.
Hello, I'm Ian Stone. This is Handbreak Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Today, we'll be talking about Gabriel Magalhães, how we've developed tactically this season, as well as choosing our goal of the month. Couldn't have done this in December, could we? Anyway, safe to say, there are a few to pick from. I'm joined by Adrian Clarke and Art de Roche. Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Before we start talking about our rock of a centre-half, another centre-half, an ex-centre-half, Man United centre-half, Rio Ferdinand, he was recorded talking about, I don't know whether this was a wind-up, to be honest with you, because he was saying how if Man United dispensed with the services of Erik ten Hag and they said, our man is Arteta, we want Arteta, Rio Ferdinand said, and this was recorded, he can't deny this, said, oh, Mikel Arteta would leave for Arsenal for Man United 100%. I believe it might be one of the most delusional things I've ever heard in my life. Although there's been a few comedians I've met who've gone, oh, I could do 20 minutes at a comedy store. I thought, mate, no, you couldn't. But really, utterly ridiculous. And he obviously got a tremendous amount of stick. So we were thinking about delusion and what are the most delusional things you've heard. Art, you were going to talk about Twitter, weren't you? I mean, there's loads of it on there.
Well, that's the point. I think if you go on Twitter any given day, you'd see, I actually can't actually give you a number of how many delusional takes you'd probably see, but...
No, but this is Rio Ferdinand, Art. This is a man who, you know, I've met Rio. He appears to know what he's talking about. But when it comes to the punditry and their particular clubs, whether it's Man United or Liverpool, because there's generally the clubs that they come from, they seem completely one-eyed. And more than perhaps some of the Arsenal. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know. It's difficult to say.
But I'd say to that, like, people don't have to pay too much attention to it if they know, like, if they know it's not coming from a place of actual knowledge, then why actually bite on those sorts of things? That's what kind of confuses me about Twitter so much, is that the outrage from Arsenal fans always makes these things a lot bigger than they actually should be. So yeah, hopefully if anyone's listening, maybe don't be so quick to bite on them, because then you don't give it as much oxygen to actually grow.
What a, honestly, Adrian, I'm in awe of Art's wisdom at such a young age. Genuinely,
so
that's
wise,
exactly it's exactly the sort of thinking. We shouldn't even be discussing this. You're absolutely right.
But I mean, isn't Rio a twerp? Seriously. I mean, come on. What is that all about? I mean,
what is that all about?
We're not in the early 2000s, are we? We're not in the early noughties. Or not mid to late noughties, rather, where we lost players to Manchester United, you know, like Van Persie. You know, Arteta would never dream of doing that. It's a nonsense thing to say. Don't really know what he was thinking there. I've only just found out about this opener, so I'm thinking on the hoof. And the first thing that comes to my mind is Man City fans. They are absolutely deluded when it comes to their club and the morals of their club and the way that they have built their success and these charges. They are very difficult fan base to engage with sensibly around all matters financial and actually just any kind of criticism of Manchester City, the way they go about their work off the pitch, the things that I've heard and had to listen to from City fans is completely deluded.
I've stopped listening to them, to be honest with you. Not only have I stopped listening to them, I've stopped watching them as well. I mean, I just don't give a shit. Mm. I genuinely don't. Like the other day, Haaland got 5-4 De Bruyne assists. I thought, I couldn't give a shit. I mean, I couldn't. I watched Newcastle against Blackburn in the Cup the other day. I don't want to watch them. I don't want to watch them because it all seems a little bit clinical and what is the point of it all? I mean, interesting enough, Man United fans of my acquaintance, they absolutely want Arsenal to win. They obviously don't want City to win, but I think they hate Liverpool more, to be honest with you. But in terms of delusion, Gary Neville said stuff about Arsenal. Wasn't there a whole interview when Gary Neville was talking about, I don't know what Mikel Arteta's plan is, what their strategy.
Yeah, like that, yeah,
that's right, all that. So we've heard it loads and loads of times. And as I was moaned about on the pod on Monday, we had Carragher like mentioning us during the the League Cup
final.
That
finals. Was incredible.
It was a little bit. It's nothing
so
to do with us.
It was just so wrong.
Well, we're in their heads, which is nice, right? I like the fact that we're in their heads. One of the reasons, of course, that we're in their heads is because we're challenging. And one of the main reasons we're challenging is because of a certain man who is, I think, our wall at the back.
Crowding in there in front of him now, though. And it's off again!
He's becoming a real leader in the team.
And there's the header from Gabriel. He loves scoring against Fulham, this fella.
Tim Bayona goes. Gabriel scores!
It's another one!
Really good defending from Gabriel.
Yeah, he's still pumped. Look at him. He's still proud that he's wearing that shirt.
He's a player with a huge ambition.
That's a fantastic tackle and hat to do as well from Gabriel. It is Arsenal's number 6.
Yeah, he started the season on the bench, Gabby. There were links to Saudi. I was a bit worried by that, I'll be honest with you. He formed such a good partnership with William Saliba last season. But he's come back in the side. He was left out inexplicably, I thought, early on in the season, Adrian. But he's been exceptional, hasn't he, this year?
It's one of those where you look back at those team sheets and you're thinking, did that actually happen? Like, what was going on there? Because it was hard to understand at the time, and I think it was to do with Thomas Partey kind of being in the side at right back and whatnot, and just the balance of the side. But yeah, Gabriel and Saliba is a formidable partnership. It's up there. It's probably the best in the league, if I'm honest. I think Spurs have got a good one now. I think that Konate and Van Dijk are pretty strong, but I don't think I'd swap it. I don't think I'd swap our centre halves for anybody. I like the cut of their jib, and it's just hard to believe that those links were there to Saudi and that he didn't actually start those games. But he's a sensational presence within the team. I think it's his determination that really stands out. Just the aggression in everything that he does, not least in the way that he's so fiercely passionate about escaping his markers at set pieces. I mean, that's been outstanding to watch, hasn't it?
I mean, he has. Mikel Arteta said recently he's become a real leader in the team. It's not just how he plays, is it? It's the example he sets to everyone. He's 26 now, so he's one of the older players in the group. He's got some experience and he seems to be getting more of a personality on the pitch.
Yeah, one of the big things with that, I think, was I remember that was a few weeks ago and I asked Mikel about it and he mentioned how mature Gabriel has become because of things both on the pitch and off the pitch. And obviously he's started his own family, which helps with that, but also speaking to a few people at the club, they mentioned how a lot of the coaches put quite a lot of focus in actually telling him that he would be more of a leader in that Saliba Gabriel partnership. Obviously, Saliba's only 22 years old. So you could see he's taken that responsibility and basically ran with it. And personally, I think what's been really encouraging to see is, I guess, I felt from very early on, he was an amazing centre-back, but there always was that accusation that, oh, he has a mistake in them. I don't think he has that anymore. And he's been, I think, Arsenal's most consistent player for 2 years, going on 3 years, I'd say.
Yeah.
Along with Saka, obviously. But his growth, I think, is a really good example, not just to young centre-backs, but young players in general, in terms of arriving somewhere where you're quite young. Now he's already played over 150 games for Arsenal, 26 years old, still got a lot of development probably to do as well. So really nice kind of progression.
No, and you're right about that partnership. We keep those two together for the next 5-6 years. I mean,
there's
not a lot going. There's not a lot going through there. As you said, Adrian, 4 goals already this season. Almost got a 5th against Newcastle. He is so dangerous from set pieces. You'd imagine our set piece coach would be one of the first players that they would aim for, right? he's target number one, I would have thought.
Yeah, like when you man mark him, and most teams do choose to man mark Gabriel for sensible reasons, then you're kind of in trouble. Whoever's looking after him, whoever's been delegated Gabriel's drawn the short straw, because he's really clever, actually, at the way he sort of manipulates space and the way that he sort of shrugs people off. And most of our routines are designed to free him up to attack the space that we've deliberately created. And yeah, he attacks those crosses with real conviction, doesn't he? There's nothing half-hearted about him. So yeah, no.
Well, there's nothing half-hearted about anything he does,
no,
is there, really?
I wouldn't want to play against him. I mean, if you're a striker, he's always sort of looking to nip in front, isn't he? He's touch tight quite a lot. I also think this season he's come, well, not just this season, last season as well, but with Zinchenko coming in field, he's had to basically play at left back in possession, which is something that maybe he wouldn't have experienced too often previously. And I think that's helped develop his passing range. I think his distribution has improved because of that. We've seen him step forward a lot more often. We've seen him go on the charge, a little bit like Tony Adams used to back in the day. He's not afraid to do that now. And of course, because teams are dropping off deeper and deeper against us, his touches are now higher up the pitch. So it's really important that he sort of builds that chemistry with a Martinelli in particular, really on his outside. And I think that they've really struck up a nice understanding. I think he feeds him now with a lot of good passes.
Yeah, I mean, his passing, there's no doubt his passing has improved. There was a pass against Newcastle, 25 yards through 5 Newcastle players, first time. I mean, he does get a lot of time in the ball. Oh, I remember Sol Campbell, God bless him, he was an amazing centre-half, but quite often teams would drop off and let him have the ball because they felt his distribution was perhaps not as good as the rest of the team. And when you look at the rest of the team, you can understand why. And I felt that teams used to do that with Gabriel, but I mean, he's doing passes from deep through the lines and opening teams up. It's another sign of that confidence, isn't it?
Definitely. And I think one thing that probably goes into that as well is, without Zinchenko on that side, you probably need someone else to play those passes, because now a lot more of the play is going through Ben White and Declan Rice on the right. Then who actually is going to progress the ball on the left? It's going to be Gabriel, obviously, because Kivior is going to be much wider than Zinchenko ever was. So I think that's another, I guess, example of him maybe taking on a bit more responsibility on the pitch in a different way than we've mentioned before. And he seems to be really relishing that. So hopefully it continues, because I was actually at his debut against Fulham and he had to be kind of like coached through the game by Rob Holding, which seems like, it seems insane to say now, but I feel like even that day you could see the real makings of a proper quality centre-half. And he's just grown year on year. So hopefully he continues to grow even more.
Declan Rice said, because he was interviewed about when he arrived and what he thought about the whole place, he said,
"The one who's really surprised me is actually Gabriel.
Yeah.
He's so aggressive, so strong, you know, really wants it all the time, never loses a duel. And when you've got two centre-backs like that who want it,
helps.
Play aggressive, it really helps and gives you confidence."
Adrian, we've been on this podcast in the past when Lee Dixon used to do it a while ago, and he talked about the relationship between the holding midfield player and the two centre-halves and that triangle. And the aggression and the anticipation and the way that they play. I mean, it essentially forces opponents to go wide, right? And Declan Rice saw it straight away. We know how lucky we are to have him.
Yeah, that axis is arguably the best in the division, isn't it, in terms of what we've got there. I know that City have got Rodri in front of their two centre-halves, but like I said, I wouldn't swap our centre-halves for theirs. So yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why we've faced so few shots. He does lose the occasional duel. I'm just looking, 63.4% of duels he wins, almost 61% of his aerial duels. They're still very, very good numbers for Gabriel.
Just on that, though, I don't really feel like a centre-back has to win it. Like
every duel, no.
Every duel, because sometimes it'll all be about the second ball. So
yeah.
I just wanted to mention that because I'm not like digging you out or anything. But,
no, I get that.
Just to add a bit more context because I don't want people to take that the wrong way.
No, fair enough. The other thing I just wanted to mention briefly is that I think the makeup of the squad also helps him. He's not on his own, is he? You've got Gabriel Martinelli, you've got Gabriel Jesus in there, you've got Jorginho, who's sort of half South American himself. I think that collective is very good for their own well-being, but also for the harmony of the group, because you know what South Americans are like. They bring a certain light and energy to the group, but the fact that he's not on his own has helped massively, in my opinion.
We just wanted to sort of express in this little midweek pod that we do our appreciation of Gabriel Magalhães. I mean, we do talk about this, but he's a man who undoubtedly deserves a song for what he's been doing for us and what hopefully he will do for us for the rest of the season. This is Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
They get a handbrake off and you can see that they are more free to play.
Ian Stone, Adrian Clarke, Art de Roche on The Athletic's Arsenal podcast, Handbrake Off. We thought we'd delve a bit deeper into the tactical changes we've seen Mikel implement this season. Adrian, we all loved last season, or most of it, but were we too one-dimensional? Essentially, get it out to the wide men and then just, you know, they're just pace to burn and skills to burn. And it was a little bit, if you can force Arsenal out to the wide areas, get two men on Saka, two men on Martinelli, and also stop Odegaard doing what he does, you stop a lot of what Arsenal did.
Yeah, this is a sort of oversimplification of it, but yeah.
Of course it was, I said it. That's why I'm asking you.
We had our plan A, and the plan B wasn't wholly different, was it? There wasn't too much difference in the way that we went about our work in games. And I think that was one criticism levelled at Arteta towards the business end of the season. Have you got another way when they do nullify those threats out wide? And obviously with Zinchenko coming infield as a matter of course, that sort of narrowed us down a little bit. So, no, I think the whole basis of the evolvement of the team this season has been centred around variance. I think that the community shield was the case in point, because if you remember, you cast your mind back to it, we always played against Manchester City the way we play. And in that game, we didn't. We went with a much more pragmatic setup. We were much more cautious. We set out to be strong down the spine of the field. And it worked. We won the game, albeit on penalties. But it showed that we'd learned and that we'd found a plan B, and that's developed into our big game alternative, hasn't it? That we've seen of late, and it helped us beat City, helped us beat Liverpool. Other things have worked. You know, I think the acquisition of Havertz has given him much more license as well to try different things, because he's a player that kind of doesn't fit the mold, and I think that Arsenal not fitting the tactical mould is the way that Arteta wanted this team to develop, and I'm sure Art's got his thoughts on some of the ways that we have changed this year.
Kai Havertz, obviously we spent quite a lot of time, all Arsenal fans have spent quite a lot of time talking about Kai Havertz, and it was a little bit worrying at first, but now for a big game you'd probably have him in the starting 11, wouldn't you? And is it because of what Adrian says that the you're not quite sure where he's going to be? He's harder to pick up. He can arrive late in the box. He has qualities that no one else really does in this team.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a major benefit. And for Arteta himself, he's almost had to, I guess, learn when the right times to use him in certain ways are. So a couple of weeks ago, I asked him like if he's actually been quite upset with not having certain players available because of injury. And he said it's actually a great opportunity to adapt players in certain positions, roles and spaces and see how they react. And then a couple of days later, we saw the Havertz and Trossard kind of partnership for the first time, I think, at West Ham.
That seemed to work though, didn't it? To
be so, honest. Yeah, exactly. Right. I think sometimes it may not be something that was planned from, say, August or July, but if he is open enough now or more open than last season to see, okay, maybe this is a dynamic that could be worth exploring, then I think it just shows that he's grown as a coach, which is obviously very encouraging for the back end of the season.
And Adrian, on that point, I mean, it's a long season. You start in August, you finish, you know, hopefully June the 1st in the Champions League final. But it, throughout all that time, you just don't know how things are gonna turn out. And you maybe in one game, you put Havertz and Trossard together, say on the training ground even, or later on in a game, and you see something, you think, oh, that could work really well. And then suddenly that becomes another possibility. But it's all down, is it not, to the versatility of the players. We've been on here many times talking about how the players, they all seem to be able to play in a number of different positions and a number of different ways. And that's what he's always been aiming at, Mikel Arteta, is that adaptability and being able to play in different positions.
Yeah, it's about fluidity, isn't it? And that's that. When, that's the vision he had, I think, at the outset when he took over the job. He had so much more he had to do. He had to put so many building blocks in place to get to this point. And I think he's done brilliantly at doing that. And now he's developed this clearly defined style of play. Now, that style of play doesn't change if the system changes, if players are in different positions. It's all about interchanging. It's about catching opponents off guard. I loved the Liverpool Cup. Was it the Cup game where we lost? But it worked in terms of we played the twin false nines with Havertz. Or was it the league game? I can't remember. Havertz and Ødegaard basically played. When we went to press, it was a 4-4-2. When we were sitting in a low block, it was a 4-2-4-0.
I think that
and
was
then
the
in,
cup any, game.
Everything in between.
It was the cup game.
Yeah, everything in between was kind of looked like the usual Arsenal. So,
and we created a lot of chances in that game.
So much chance, so many chances in that game. So, you know, even that is an improvement on the false nine variants that we've seen previously with Arsenal. So, yeah, it's he's a clever guy, isn't he? The manager, he really is. He's got his eye on so many different things, and I think next year we'll probably look even slightly different again. You know, he's just always moving.
I mean, we've talked a hell of a lot about the set pieces. Well, I think we said the other day, 19 goals from set pieces. I mean, they were joking about it on Match of the Day. I think Troy Deeney said this set piece coach deserves a pay rise. Yeah. I think he'll be getting one as well, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But we are a menace at set pieces. I think the fact that Declan Rice can take such a wicked free kick and corner, I mean, I didn't realise quite how good he was. But looking back, he took him at West Ham quite regularly. So that has made an enormous difference as well. I mean, I remember so many corners from a few years ago that hit the first man. I don't remember us doing that recently.
No, everything's very well planned out. And on Rice, the ball for Kivior's goal is actually ridiculous. Like the area he's put it in and the shape he's gotten that with that pace as well. I completely understand when Mikel Arteta said we've seen that as just something that we can use to our advantage.
And I should say.
To the point of from the growth from a few years ago, I think since Jovert's come in, Arsenal have scored more set piece goals than anyone in the Premier League. I think it's 50 at the minute, but I can double check.
Ridiculous.
With Jay.
The one I liked was the free kick away at West Ham that he took.
Yeah.
That was basically aiming for the sort of near post,
unplayable, wasn't it?
And it was pretty much unplayable. The goalkeeper couldn't come and get it. And Gabriel just ran onto it and glanced it in. But if it wasn't him, it would have been someone behind him. I think Havertz was
Gabriel did give him a little chat before he took it. I'm not
he
sure
did.
He guys saw.
He did. But the fact that he says to him, can you put it in this spot? And he put it exactly in that spot. And like I say, there was a shot from behind where you see Declan Rice taking it. And I love the way he whipped that ball in. I genuinely do.
Brilliant technically, isn't he? Yeah, I think blindside runs have been the key to our success. So this Kivior one's a great example that Art's brought up because it's the most simple set piece ever. It's basically someone in the far post region makes a run across at the last minute, nips in front of the man across the near stick. It's not that fancy. There were no blockers. There was no crazy movement. It's just one player running to meet the ball just ahead of the opposition defender. But that, I think, is at the core of a lot of our set piece success. And it relies on delivery. If that delivery is whipped in at the right speed, the defenders, because they're looking at the ball, they're not looking what's behind them. They can't afford to. So we're just basically coming in at the very last second to flick them either on or into the back of the net. It's happened so many times. It's genius is in its simplicity, really. But it relies on Rice, Saka, Martinelli, whoever's taken it, to be on the money with the deliveries. And they have really improved.
I think what's been really important to kind of unlocking Rice in that role as well is the fact that Arteta said Arsenal actually have better players that they can use inside the box in those set piece situations, which when he first said probably sounds ridiculous because of how tall Declan Rice is. But I know we've mentioned this before. This is now a very tall Arsenal team. So you've got players like Gabriel, Saliba and Kivior in there already. Why not use someone with such great delivery when so much of what you're looking for depends on that?
Someone who's not tall, David Raya. I mean, the goalkeeper was one of the smaller players in our team at the moment, which is a little bit weird, but why not? I mean, we've had quite a bit of control over games, certainly in the last few weeks. It's been astonishing. David Raya's not getting... Nobody's really talking about David Raya. Adrian, on the podcast on Monday, I mentioned that pass out to Bukayo Saka, who controlled it like the king that he is, came inside, ran at them, gave it to Martinelli, who gave it to Havertz, who should have scored. But Raya's pass out was really on the money. I mean, it was right to him. And he's doing that more often now. And that really is what we bought him for.
Look, Ramsdale's distribution is good as well. I mean, don't forget it. I mean, I'll never forget the performance at Leicester a couple of years ago where he was zinging passes into midfield. Ramsdale is a brilliant distributor in my opinion.
Do you think Raya is better than Ramsdale at distribution, though? Because I thought that was one of the reasons that they bought him.
I think
him.
He's more comfortable at luring opponents onto him and playing through gaps than Aaron Ramsdale. I think Aaron Ramsdale's technique at striking the ball is almost as good, if not just as good as David Raya's. Personally, David Raya's
so close.
He's got a ping on him. He can do. David Raya can do the sort of 70-yard launch over a high back four very well, actually. But I don't think there's that much. I just think Raya is more suited to saying, come on then, come and get me. And then he'll just pass it into someone through bodies.
Yeah.
But I think in general, just David Raya is more confident now. His passing's better. Everything's better about his game. He's more comfortable coming out and making those claims. The thing he's not had to do much of is saves. I mean,
no,
it's crazy.
That's true. No, that is true as well. With what he's got in front of him, our defenders. In fact, the way we're defending as a team, that, in fact, while we're talking about that, this sort of 4-4-2 out of possession that we were doing maybe last season, that's evolved as well, hasn't it, Art? The way that we're pressing. I mean, Martin Odegaard is leading the press, and my God, the energy that boy has got. But we suffocate teams now. I remember Liverpool from about three seasons ago doing that to us at Anfield during the COVID time, when I have never felt so tense watching a game because our boys did not have a millisecond on the ball. And I think that's what it's like to play against Arsenal at the moment.
Yeah, I think Adrian mentioned it earlier, but the Community Shield was basically the blueprint, because you have Ødegaard, who's always been doing that work. But then when he's actually got the support of Declan Rice, who covers ground like no one I've seen. Like, I remember being at Wembley for that game, and I think it's the tackle on Bernardo Silva, where he just, he comes out of nowhere. And it was very much a wow moment. And he's done that multiple times since then. And I feel like that obviously allows Arsenal to play a bit higher, be more dominant, which is, I think, the word that Arteta prefers instead of control. But also, and this is going to go in a piece tomorrow, which is actually about David Raya, but Arsenal's defensive line has got higher again this year. So I think it's the average kind of distance from goal where they catch opposition teams offside is now 30 meters. And four seasons ago, that was at 21 meters. So
huge difference.
Very big difference.
Huge difference. And obviously Declan Rice has a lot to do with that. The Athletic's Nick Miller recently said the following: there are many other candidates to be player of the year, but there are few for whom weekly excellence is now just taken as the standard. And there aren't many who have completed their teams quite as much as Declan Rice. I mean, Adrian, I said it a few months ago. I know they're very physically different, but I remember when Kante came with Leicester in the year that Leicester won the title, and he was everywhere. And you thought, well, how does he do that? And I get the same feeling with Declan Rice.
Yeah, it's a really important position. It's just such a vital one, just in and out of possession, because you're obviously the launch pad for a lot of attacks as well. He's sensational, with and without the ball. You know, we're seeing him drive forward a lot more. We saw that from that left eight position the other day. He's been, a phenomenal signing. We knew that he would be. And I agree with Art. I think he helps us with our press, because he really does squeeze up, often quite late on. He'll watch it, and then bang, he'll get really tight to one of the midfielders and steal it. He almost tempts the opposition to say, go on then, give it a try. Pass into that guy in the middle there, and then he's on him. And we've seen him rob them of the ball loads of times. I've just got a stat up, actually, that, because I was just curious as we were talking there about our pressing, which has undoubtedly got better and better and better year on year. I've got the stats from 2020-21 in front of me. And passes per defensive action is how many passes a team get before we sort of disrupt it and whatnot. It's the best gauge of pressing. And we were lower mid-table in that field, 3 years ago. 14.3 passes per defensive action. That's now 9.9, and we're the second best. Shot ending high turnovers, wait for this, we got 41 in the entire season in 2021. We're already on 52, and we lead the way in the Premier League this season when it comes to that. So we're brilliant at suffocating teams and creating shots off the back of it. And it just, in games where opponents do wind you up with their antics, do slow you down and double up on the wingers, you've got to find other ways to create chances. And pressing is one of the most underrated ways of creating a chance without having to be creative or imaginative.
We have scored quite a lot of goals in February. I don't want this to seem too celebratory, but we are going to have a little goal of the month. We've got 18 to choose from. We've all got a list in front of us. Just choose one each. Art, what are you going to take?
It has to be Declan Rice at West Ham for me. I was lucky enough to be in the stadium, and as the ball just went past Ødegaard and Trossard, you see him lining up, and everything went in slow motion, and I went, oh my God, in the press box.
Are you allowed to do that? You'd have been drummed out a few years
ago. To be fair, it was more in a tone of surprise than celebration, so I think it was all right. Yeah.
Was it? Yeah, fair enough.
No, I said it like as he hit, so I wasn't celebrating.
It was a beautiful hit. It was a beautiful hit. I did the telly show that I do, and we did a West Ham show last night, and I asked them whether they felt, you know, how they felt about Rice leaving and whether they're pleased for him. And they looked at me like, what are you talking about? And I said, well, you know, in the same way that Arsenal fans were pleased for Robin Van Persie when he left and won the title of Man United. And so they understood that I was maybe joking, but there was a West Ham fan clapping behind the goal when that one went in. One guy who just couldn't help himself. And you thought, fair play, mate. That's how I would like to think I would be if it happened to us. Not the players are going to leave us anytime soon, I would hope. Adrian, one from you.
Yeah, well, I'm going to name drop here. I did a sort of player Q&A thingy yesterday with a few of the guys, Jorginho, Smith-Rowe and Fabio Vieira. They're good value, actually.
The mood's good, I'm assuming.
Oh, they love it. Jorginho's very funny. He's really good. Yeah. He's a good character. And we were talking about goals of the season, actually, and the two that they'd sort of narrowed it down to was Eddie Nketiah against Sheffield United.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable goal.
Yeah.
And Declan's one at West Ham. And in the end, Declan's came second in their own sort of collective thinking to Eddie's one. But for me, the goal of the month has to be Rice. There was Smith Rowe was loving Trossard's goal against Liverpool, and he flicks it past the player and runs down the left and then chops in. That was a really crafty goal. I loved it.
Yeah, that's a very Smith Rowe type goal, I feel. I'd say a little flick.
You could see him doing it, couldn't you? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. He would think he could do something like that, and hopefully we'll see that very, very soon. My one, I mean, looking at this list, there's some beautiful goals. Saka v West Ham when he cut inside the fullback, the centre half, and just, I mean, I like the goalkeeper just standing there and he's going, well, I'm not saving that. There's absolutely no way I'm saving that. That's like, that was like you do when you're playing against your children in goal and you bury one in the corner and they look at you and go, Dad, well, I've got no chance with that. And that's what it felt like to me. But the one I'm picking, and it's not a brilliant goal in so many ways, but Martin Ødegaard against Burnley, right, the first one, Martinelli put in out wide and that lovely ball across to Martin Ødegaard, that first touch, because there wasn't a huge amount of room there. His first touch, and then it's just a bullet into the bottom corner. He rifled it in. There's no chance for the keeper. And I thought, when you see a goal like that, you think, you know, when it's hit in that way, there is no chance for the keeper. But to stop the ball in the way he did and then just hit it with minimal bat lift, I thought, I just love watching him. That technique of that man is just,
I think, both him and Saka are getting to a point where their technical ability is just allowing them to be as ruthless as possible.
I think that's exactly right. And that was a perfect example of Ødegaard's ruthlessness, and Saka's one as well, where you went, well, you ain't going to miss that. I'd have put my house on that. My missus would have had something to say about that, but I would have done it anyway. Look, it's just a quick bet. He's through on goal. He's not going to miss. Sheffield United on Monday night. Look, we're not going to say much about this, but there's no room for error, right? But the boys, they don't look like they're going to be complacent, Adrian.
Yeah, I saw them against Brighton in the flesh at Bramall Lane and they got completely outplayed. And yeah, I think it's a game that we should win to nil, I would imagine. You know, that I don't want to be disrespectful, but they are the weakest team in the division, I think.
They're terrible,
by some
Adrian.
Distance,
they are not good at all.
No, if we concede a goal, I think it'd be hugely disappointing. If we don't score at least three, I think it will feel disappointing, you know, because, yeah, they're weak. And I just think it's all about our mentality in the game. We've just got to have that ruthlessness that Art was mentioning there, have the right attitude. And based on recent performances, I can't see a scenario where we don't show up with those.
Yeah, well, let's hope that is the case. Let's have a song. Art, what you got?
Quite a simple one, because it's a night game. Nights by Frank Ocean.
Oh! I see what you've done there, because it's a night game. Okay, Adrian, can you match that level of dissection and wit that I just showed?
No, that's next level, isn't it? No
it
chance.
It is next level, yeah.
I was trying to think of just something about the change, you know, the making changes with the tactics and the development and self-improvement. Sia, I mean, I'm not that familiar with this song. Sia has got a very well-known song called Courage to Change. And I think after the brilliant season that we had last year, it needed a little bit of courage on everybody's part to make changes and to say, do you know what, we can be even better than this, but to do that we've got to change a little bit. So I think Courage to Change is a good way of sort of summing up what we've done this year.
Yeah, I was just thinking about Rio Ferdinand's ridiculous comment. And Madness,
Space
the band,
Cowboy.
Space Cadet. Do you know what? That is a decent shout. No, but I've gone Madness. I had a song called Madness.
Madness, I call it gladness.
Madness, they call it Madness. Because I was just thinking, that's mad. What are you talking about, mate? There is absolutely no way that Mikel Arteta would go anywhere near Manchester United at the moment. You know, do you want to go from a project to another project that's just not very far along? Do you fancy that? No, I don't. I'm enjoying this one. We're enjoying it as well. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of And Break Off. Thanks to Art. Thanks to Adrian. And thanks to Jay, our producer. And we'll see you Tuesday after Sheffield United. Ta-ra.